This is Mentor Talk with Jerry Phillips, your Sunday morning community radio magazine, bringing communities and people together.
9 minutes past 8 o'clock, daylight saving time, and it's time right now for our first Sunday political debate. And they're in house. Here they are, ladies and gentlemen, as I introduce them. They're ready, they're anxious, they look forward to every first Sunday, because we know when these folks show up that we know exactly what's going to happen to America in the future. It's from this panel right here that we can tell what's going to happen to our great country. For instance, we have Nicholas Sawalk, Libertarian.
Good morning, Jerry.
We have Jim Pomeroy, Republican.
Good morning.
We have... That sounds like a Republican, doesn't it? We have Emily Leffler, Independent.
Good morning, Jerry.
Notice the difference between the Republicans and the Independents.
One's a girl.
We have Patrice McKinney, Democrat.
Good morning, Jerry.
All right. I don't know about that either. Anyway, Eric Mickelson, I don't want to be taking favors. I'm strictly in the middle. Eric Mickelson, Green Party.
Hello, Jerry.
Who has to leave early.
Right.
But Jerry, you're not in the middle. You always favor the ladies.
We won't go there. Telephone number 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon wireless system. Get online now, because I know there's something that's going to be said that you're going to disagree with. Everything is said here normally on the first Sunday, I disagree with anyway. The topics today: will Condoleezza Rice's testimony become a major hinge to the reelection of the Bush presidency? Is she being singled out as the fall guy for the administration's priorities before 9/11 after being warned? Out of desperation, could Condoleezza Rice become a Bush partner on the Republican ticket? Whoa. Where do you want to start with this? Jim Pomeroy, I'll start with you. What will Condoleezza Rice's testimony this week before the commission, the 9/11 commission, what play will this have on the future reelection of George Bush?
Well, I think it'll be very positive, because everyone's going to be attacking her. And I think when she, gets before the commission and puts out her side of the story, I think it's going to be very positive for the president. It's going to refocus on, on the administration and how they've been very successful in the war on terror.
I think that I have to disagree with Jim, Jerry. I think it would be really helpful for the Democrats in the upcoming election to have Condoleezza's testimony out there. It'll be quite clear that our national security advisor is a little more than a rubber stamp for the vice president, for Cheney and Rumsfeld and the rest of the guys. And I think that this testimony is going to make that pretty clear to the rest of the American people.
Eric?
Well, I think she's got a hard road ahead of her. You just look at the record and, going back and searching the journalistic record for 2001, and really, there was not much talk about the degree to which Al-Qaeda was a threat, even after the coal bombings and whatnot. The administration was actually playing down the role that Al-Qaeda may have had in those events. And so I think she's really got a tough case to make.
Nicholas, let me ask you, is the public really concerned about Condoleezza Rice's testimony, next Wednesday or Thursday?
I don't know if the public's concerned so much about her testimony. I'm actually a little concerned about this administration's willingness to, basically, in their pursuit of Iraq, they're willing to throw anything under the bus, whether it's Condoleezza Rice, who, had presidential privilege and then all of a sudden woke up one morning and didn't have it again. Whether it's the truth about weapons of mass destruction, whether it's, our fiscal security by spending obscene amounts of money without any real clear picture of how to get the money to spend, or whether it's our constitutional rights by passing the Patriot Act with the help of John Kerry.
There are those who say that she can't say very much. She has to be very careful of what she says because of national security. What about that, Emily?
Well, it's not just a matter of national security. I think that one of the things that Richard Clark talked about in his testimony was the responsibility of those who work in the administration to spin for the administration. And so I think anything that comes out of there is going to be cast under that light. Besides the fact, this is the first time that she's testified under oath. So a lot of people are saying, well, is she going to perjure herself? She's not going to perjure herself, because she's never said anything under oath before to go against. So
what exactly would she perjure herself about? What do you think she's lied about?
Well, for example, Jim, in 2002, in a joint inquiry, her deputy said that the Bush administration's policy was to, quote unquote, roll back Al-Qaeda. Now, she has been saying, now, we'll see what she says under oath, but in the press, she's been saying that their policy was to eliminate al-Qaeda, and that was how they took a step beyond the Clinton administration's policy to roll back al-Qaeda. That was her way of saying, we're eliminating, we're not just rolling back, we're taking a harder look at al-Qaeda, whereas everybody else is, those that have come out and spoken against the administration, Richard Clark, for example, have said, you know, we haven't even taken nobody was even taking a close look at al-Qaeda before 9/11.
Rolling back and eliminating sounds like pretty much the same thing. I still don't
know
what you're getting at.
Well, I would think so, too, but that's she made a clear distinction that they, because if you've been listening to the testimony and all the hubbub, Jim,
right.
One of the things that Richard Clark was saying is that when the Bush administration came in, that there was not a big difference, that they didn't pay attention. In fact, they stepped back from looking at al-Qaeda and started focusing on Iraq. And one of the things that Condoleezza Rice has been saying was, no, we in fact looked harder at Iraq. We were establishing a policy to eliminate, not just roll back. But 2 years ago they were saying, no, we're rolling back.
It's,
it's a subtle difference, but it's the PR that the White House throws out there.
The only evidence is the question is whether she's right or whether Richard Clark is right. And, you know, it sounds, like a, sounds like a Fox special when passed over bureaucrats attack.
Listen to Nicholas Sawalk, who has all of the answers to this.
It seems to me that we were attacked by al-Qaeda and the Bush administration, in some sort of frustration about how hard it is to find them, said, wow, this Saddam Hussein guy, he's still where we left him last, and he doesn't have an army. We can go get him. And whether or not the administration had a policy of wanting to eliminate al-Qaeda or not, it was obvious that policy was not being pursued with the same vigor that the policy of invading Iraq was being pursued. And with the string of revelations about how less and less and less about what this administration's told us has been true, I think the Bush administration is just trying to spread it out over as long as possible so that no one will notice that if you look at the very beginning and you look at right now, that we're miles apart in what the rhetoric is.
From a libertarian to the Democrat.
You know, Jerry, I think also what we saw here and what's becoming clear from what Condoleezza's saying is that we had your basic run-of-the-mill partisan politics. Once the Bush administration came into office, they wanted to undo what the Clinton administration did. They wanted to put their priorities into place without taking a good close look at what was going on and whether that was justified or not. The Bush administration clearly had, you know, their policy against Saddam Hussein, and they were going to pursue that regardless of what they...
Perhaps Patrice can talk about how her party gave our president a blank check to go and fight any war he wanted to in any country he wanted to, and decided to support the Patriot Act without even reading it. Tell me about how it's all partisan politics and how it's the Republicans' fault.
Well, I don't think that was all a Democrat doing.
That the Democrats could have stopped both the Patriot Act and war on Iraq if they wanted to, but they didn't. They rolled over for this administration, and they disregarded their duty to uphold the Constitution.
And they thought we were right.
Eric, isn't this the really the underlying pinch that Mr. Kerry is facing, and Bush reminds him all the time?
Of course it
you
is.
You voted in our behalf.
Right, exactly. And I totally agree with what Nicholas just said. Of course, you know, the issue with Kerry is that he voted to give Bush the blank check to go to war. He voted for the Patriot Act, and he comes back, at least during the primaries, he was coming back and attacking the president on those issues. I just don't think he's a credible opponent of President Bush's policies that are the most egregious.
Yeah, I have to agree with Eric and Nick. On one hand, the Democrats say, well, you know, we weren't given the most forthright opinion or intelligence from the White House when we were approaching this bill. But on the other hand, you know, people want somebody who is going to stand up against Bush and against the Republicans and, you know, against these policies and not cower in fear.
It's funny that they didn't stop long enough to get the right information before acting.
I agree with you. I agree.
Our telephone number 301-230-0980, #980 of Verizon Wireless System. We have lines open. Get into the action here with a little bit of First Sunday politics as we talk with our politicians, and they are Eric Mickelson, Green Party, Patrice McKinney, Democrat, Independent Emily Loeffler, Republican Jim Homily, and Libertarian Nicholas Sawalk. 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon. We'd like to hear from you. And I'd like to get back to that one point I asked from the very beginning, and that is Condoleezza Rice. And Jim Pomeroy, I know you want to kick in here, but my question is, out of desperation, if Mr. Kerry, if Kerry really gets to that, and he's already put Bush on Meet the Press and on every other television show, which is something you don't normally see the president going on single shows like that. But if it gets to that edge, what's the last poll showing dead heat? If it gets to that, could Condoleezza Rice be pulled in then as a replacement for Dick Cheney?
Well, you guys have to decide whether you like Condi or not. I mean, we're hearing here that all of our panelists here just hate Condi Rice, and now I'm being asked. Now I'm being asked whether she's so popular we have to put her on the ticket.
No, come on, this is the.
I love Condi Rice. I think she's great, but I love Dick Cheney too.
But this is a typical Republican thing. If you speak against something, then you hate.
Yeah, if you call her a liar, yes, that's not you, but that's what our friendly independent.
No, I did not call her a liar. I said some said that she would perjure herself, and I said she would not because she hasn't testified before.
I actually think that I think Condoleezza Rice is probably one of the most shining stars of this whole mess. If I had any complaints about the Condi Rice situation, it's that the Bush administration has no concept of loyalty, and they're willing to throw anybody under the bus in order to continue to pursue this Iraq war that they're so hell-bent on, in spite of all the evidence.
Let's talk to the people. 301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon wireless system. Let's go to Pat in Alexandria. Pat, not Nicholas, here's your favorite person.
Well, let's not get a little hysterical here. I think Nicholas has brought out some good points. I think everyone's brought out some good points. I think Dr. Rice is probably a brilliant woman who's unfortunately in big old, good old boys network. And that's a very dangerous situation. But before we talk about the fact that this administration decided not to go after Al-Qaeda, let's go back to the Beirut bombing in 1983 when the Marines died. Let's go back to Somalia where Al-Qaeda was involved. Let's go back to, and that was not a Republican administration. Let's go back to a number of things. Al-Qaeda's been under the radar for everybody. And quite frankly, you can't go after everybody all at once. What I'm afraid of here, and quite frankly, folks, my son leaves for Iraq June 10th. I'm not happy about that. But I think what we have here is an administration who's looking for anything to make the American people feel they know what they're doing. I think two people in this administration know what they're doing. One is Rumsfeld, the other is Rice. And quite frankly, I'm not a happy camper, but I damn well can't vote for John Kerry. So y'all have a good day, and when Dr. Rice comes out of this administration, she will be the sacrificial goat, and it's unfortunate, because I don't think we have anybody as intelligent as she is to go into that position. And Mr. Clark, I mean, God, if we had listened to him, we'd have a balanced budget, no Al-Qaeda, and the world would be fine. This is an ego war, folks. Get over it. Jerry, have a lovely day.
Love you, Pat.
Bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye. 301-230. She should do commentaries every Sunday on Metro Talk. Now, 301-230-0980, pound 980, the Verizon wireless system lines open. We'd like to get your reaction to what you heard from the panelists thus far about not only Condoleezza Rice, but Al-Qaeda, Iraq, and things of that sort. And let's talk right now with Max in D.C. Good morning, Max.
Good morning. I'd like to make a comment, or I'd like to hear the panelists talk about separation of powers issue. I mean, just as soon as they started getting a little heat for standing up to our Constitution and to the separation of powers, and they stood behind Condi a little bit, and then they said, well, the American people really want to hear from that. The Democrats put a little pressure. Seems like to me the Republicans just threw her out to the dogs, says, go ahead, take your best shot at her. And, you know, what it really seems like to me is that they are they basically will do anything to make themselves look good, including throwing Condi out to the dogs. Talk to me about that.
Okay, hold on the line. Don't leave me, Max.
Well, Jerry, one thing I have not understood about the executive privilege issue is my understanding is that this states that advises to the president should be able to give advice without worry about later having to go public with that. So my question is, why then is the president and the vice president not testifying? Why are they not testifying under oath? Why is Clinton not testifying under oath? If this is a question of they should be able to make their decisions and take advice from their advisors without them later being questioned, then those that make the decision should be testifying.
That
separation of power.
But this is not a congressional commission. This is a presidential commission.
The president will be testifying.
But not under oath.
Along with Cheney.
Yeah, but they're not publicly and not under oath. That was part of their deal with putting Rice out there, and they can ask no more administration.
Part of our Constitution.
I have to respectfully disagree with the caller. The Constitution says that there has to be a separation of powers. What it does not say, and in no way discusses, is whether or not our free and open press or independent commissions have the right to hold our president responsible for the job that he does in office. I think that it's a little bit double standard to hold the most powerful position in the free world and have your advisors be able to advise you without having to talk to Congress and yet not be willing to stand up and be held accountable for the decisions you make for an entire free people.
Jim Pomeroy?
Look, the Washington Post spent weeks running headlines about, you know, why won't Connie testify? Why isn't, you know, what do they have to hide? What do they have to hide? And then the second the administration says, fine, she has nothing to hide, let her testify, then they run an editorial talking about how they didn't stand up to the commission. Well, thanks a lot, Washington Post.
Yeah, but you can blame the Washington Post, but the pressure came down on the administration, too. That was almost like an overnight decision. All of a sudden, we got a special report, special press conference in the afternoon. Oh, we changed our minds.
Yeah, but it became pretty clear that the administration, you know, again, we've got books by John Dean, we've got Richard Clark, we've got all these books coming out indicting the administration for being so secretive that they were, you know, beyond credibility given the secretiveness. So this is simply a political move to put somebody out there to make it look like they're having an open policy, which they simply aren't, because you're simply going to be briefed and going to give the administration lies.
Max, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Have a good day. This is our first Sunday political debate with Nicholas Sawalk, Jim Pomeroy, Emily Leffler, Patrice McKinney, and Eric Mickelson. Let's talk with Cassandra in D.C. Good morning.
Hi, how are you?
Fine.
Great. I was just calling to say about how the parties may seem like, particularly the Democratic Party, may seem like they didn't stand up to the Bush administration. I just want to say that I think that 9/11 and the nature of 9/11 really complicated the pursuit of what is fair and just in terms of our basic constitutional rights and war. The people were basically urged to ignore rational behavior and were immediately encouraged to go to war. American people's fear and anger were kind of used against basic rational, if you can call it that, political process in terms of pursuing an agenda. So I wanted to hear more about that perspective.
I don't disagree with the caller, and I think she's right. I think that people were that a lot of actions were taken that were not particularly rational during that time. But I think the issue is we should be holding our congressional representatives and senators to a higher standard. And I think that they should be able to cut through, calm themselves down for a few days, and like Nicholas said, take a look and read the legislation that they're passing, not just sort of knee-jerk pass legislation that's going to be inhibiting civil liberties and doing all sorts of radical actions without actually taking the time to be thoughtful about it. I mean,
Jim Pomeroy?
They could have had all the time they wanted to think about it. I mean, come on, everyone agreed, and we're having some revisionist history here. Bill Clinton and his administration for a number of years openly said that they thought Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction and that he needed to go. They didn't do anything about it. Finally, after years of the Clinton administration and then the Bush administration being concerned about him, then you had 9/11. We went in. We took out Afghanistan. Despite a lot of people who thought we shouldn't go into Afghanistan. And then he went into Iraq, and Democrats agreed with him and voted for the Iraq war.
But a lot of Americans are asking, what is the connection of 9/11 and weapons of mass destruction?
What weapons of mass destruction?
Where is there the connection? One, you talk about, and the question here with Condoleezza Rice is not weapons of mass destruction, not Iraq, but rather the warnings that came through, prior to 9/11, why were they ignored? Not in the Clinton administration, but we're talking about the immediate administration.
I think, you know, perhaps.
Well, put on the back burner.
Perhaps the problem the Bush administration had was they kept the Clinton people. I mean, Richard Clark was in charge of this.
Oh, come
He had 8 years to do something about it under Clinton.
And Bush Reagan.
And Bush kept him on.
You mean
so
the
it
Republicans
seems to me,
are going to follow Clinton's platform?
They hired Clinton's guys. And it was a nice move for bipartisanship.
And they were
but
so
then,
strong
when
in the Bush
they,
administration. They convinced Bush that you better pay attention to Iraq and not
Hold it. Clinton and Bush had the same policies at the beginning on this, and they had the same views on weapons of mass destruction. That's one of the few things they agreed on.
Let's hear from the Independent and the Democrat. Emily.
One thing I'd like to clear up. The Bush administration has tried to smear Richard Clark as a Democrat. He's a registered Republican.
No, Jim, down.
He's a registered Republican. He has been in the White House for three Republican administrations, Reagan, the first Bush, and then Clinton, and then Bush again. So this is, you know, this thing of him being a Democrat and being partisan.
I have to answer this one.
No, you don't. From the Democrat, from the Independent to the Democrat.
Well, I think we also have to ask ourselves, why has the administration been suppressing the Clinton papers when we're talking about these investigations and these testimonies? We've got 9,000 pages of Clinton-era papers that have been suppressed that the administration is not letting out. So it'll be interesting to see when these come out, you know, what we're really looking at here and how this administration has, you know, suppressed the policies that the Clinton administration had in place.
Can I say goodbye to my good buddy, Eric Mickelson, who is leaving?
Goodbye, Jerry. Thanks.
Thank you very much.
See you next month.
The Green Party is going out. They're going out to find Ralph Nader and set a whole club.
Go, Ralph, go.
There you go.
I have got to answer Emily
here.
You have
10 seconds.
I'm going to give you a primer from the State Board of Elections in Virginia. You cannot register by party in the state of Virginia. Richard Clark could not have registered as a Republican. And the fact that he keeps saying he did shows how little he knows about voting in Virginia.
So he's either Democrat or Republican.
He cannot register.
You can't register,
he can't register by party in Virginia.
Okay. Can I simply say it's 8:31? And that's daylight saving time. Be sure to set your clocks ahead if you haven't. And also change the batteries in those smoke detectors. This is Metro Talk and First Sunday Political Roundtable. Our good friend Eric Mickelson has left us. But anyway, we have the Democrat, Patrice McKinney, along with the Independent, Emily Loeffler, and Jim Homily, my good buddy, the Republican, and my good friend, the Libertarian, Nicholas Sawa. Let's go to Chris in Fairfax. Good morning.
How you doing this morning?
Fine, my friend. Go right ahead.
Good. Couple points I want to make. First point is, and this is a perceptive point, you know, since 9/11, the appearance has been there, and they've even talked about in the media, two camps in the Bush administration, that being the Cheney-Wolfowitz-Rumsfeld camp and the Rice-Powell camp. And the camp of Rumsfeld, Cheney, and Wolfowitz, that's a good old boy network. Powell's pretty much made it clear that he's not going to stay around for a second term, so I think I tend to believe that it's going to be real easy to earmark Rice as the scapegoat in this whole process. The second point on that I'd like to make is, as a veteran of Somalia and the first Gulf War, that I think a majority of Americans, and I can speak for a lot of the military personnel, have lost faith in the government as a whole, you know, in the elected process. We have no trust in them, period. You know, Bush talks about pro-military, pro-military, pro-military. Well, sure, he's pro-military, but he's pro-military about defense systems. Show me on record what he's actually done for the troops other than put them in war.
Okay, let's get Chris, don't leave, okay? Hold on the line. I got Kevin over in Westminster. Kevin, you heard what Chris has said and everybody else. Let's get your input.
Well, I just think this guy's a whiner. I mean, President Bush came into a situation that had been boiling for 10 to 15 years. When he came into office, it was, 8 months into his term, we were attacked. Remember, folks, we were attacked. We didn't attack them. They attacked us. This is a fight for freedom. If we do not take care of this matter, your ladies in where you're sitting right now will be wearing headscarves and peeking through a little vision through their scarf. And if we don't take care of it, you're going to lose your freedom. I hate to admit this, but I haven't voted since I was 18 years old. I'm 45 now.
You haven't voted since you were 18?
Right.
Uh-huh.
And I'm ashamed of that because I totally lost confidence in a lot of what I hear out there. But after seeing Kerry on TV promising everything to the world, saying he's going to get out of the war,
there's no way I could vote for that man. So I'm going to vote this time. Well, and I'm going to vote for Bush. Because you know what, folks? I like freedom. I don't want to run.
Okay, Chris, can I ask you, based on what Kevin is saying, if Bush doesn't make it to the White House, all Americans are going to lose their freedom.
Well, first off, he talked about people being whiners. Unless you've been in combat, and I was in Somalia, you know, it's hard to look at any other things, you know, in a perspective. As far as going into the situations we've gone into 9/11, I totally support President Bush and those actions. I'm not so sure I support the methodology or the reasoning that we went into it based on what he's told us, but national security is national security, and we have to look out for our interests. You know, people say that President Bush went into Iraq to, you know, correct his father's mistake or to, because we have weapons of mass destruction. Well, true or untrue, it's indifferent. We went in to protect national security, and national security was to protect the fact that here's a man that has invaded allies of ours, here's a man that's killed innocent people, here's a man that has shown a threat or potential to have weapons of mass destruction, here's a man that's tried to leverage the global economy with his oil. So I support that. I just don't support the way the president's gone about trying to sell the American people on it.
Okay, thank you very much, Chris. Thank you very much, Kevin. And my good buddy, Nicholas.
It's too bad the callers are gone, because I was really curious. The caller from Westminster referred back to us being attacked by them, and what it doesn't seem clear to me is that the them that we attacked back was the them that attacked us, and that this man who had killed many people.
I'm going to clear it up for Nick. All of those around the world who hate us and want to bomb us, they're the them, all of them.
So Saddam Hussein attacked us?
Yes, he did.
When?
As a matter of fact, he tried to kill, he actually sent assassins to kill President
Bush.
When was that?
And
he invaded Kuwait.
What year was the assassination attempt? I missed it.
About a decade ago.
A decade ago.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, because that way, you know, certainly we should let him off.
What did he do in the 10 years since?
301-230-0.
Support terrorists around the world.
Excuse me, you're stepping on my line.
Sorry, Jerry.
301-230-0980, #980, the Verizon Wireless System. Get in the action now. No sense in staying around the water cooler tomorrow saying, well, that's what they said on Big 100 and Sports Talk yesterday morning. You can join us right here on Metro Talk as we talk with the politicians on our first Sunday debate. Now, let's turn to the Democrat.
This is an outrageous statement that Jim Donnelly just said, Jerry, that we have the right to go and attack everybody that hates us and that at some point could have, whatever, might attack us. You know, we are talking about blood and treasure here. You know, we don't take it lightly. We just don't go around bombing people because they don't like us. You know, Bush went into Iraq hoping to get oil for the Americans, hoping to somehow, you know, stabilize an unstable situation. First of all, we had no business going there. Our business was with Al-Qaeda, not with Iraq, not with Saddam Hussein. He failed to get oil. He failed to stabilize Iraq. Iraq is more unstable now than it's been ever. We've got Shiite Muslims rising up against Americans. We've got American bodies hanging from bridges, mutilated. This is an outrageous, unbelievable situation created by somebody who had no right going in the first place.
Can I remind Patrice again that the Democratic Congress fully supported this going into Iraq for this outrageous
situation?
Anthony
and Annandale, good morning.
Amen.
Hello, Anthony.
Well, I got a couple of points. Everyone says that the Democrats supported it, but you remember Bush came on TV and said, are you with us or are you against us? And he put Congress to the task saying that if you guys vote against this, you guys are not with us, and everybody was worried about being reelected. So they said, okay, we better just go along with this plan because they didn't have good information.
Yeah, I love the fact that we're represented by people who can't take a little criticism in public. Oh, Mr. Bush said mean things about me.
Go ahead.
People, you know how these political games are played. They're not played for the people. They're played for themselves. They're played for the money. Why would a guy want to be a congressman when he can make more as a CEO of a company?
Don't
make that money because there's a lot of perks in that stuff, and you know it. But that's another point. Let's go to another point. How come all the people that we hate used to be our friends 10, 15 years ago?
Who?
In fact,
Saddam Hussein.
We supported Saddam Hussein.
Right.
We
Would you have rather we supported the Ayatollah? The choice there was the Ayatollah Khomeini, who had kept Americans hostage in Iran, or Saddam Hussein. And our enemy's enemy was our friend temporarily.
Why
is he our enemy now? Why did we smear in the face, Jim?
Because Khomeini's gone.
Jim, smear in the face. That's what the gentleman's talking about. Anthony, thank you very much for your input. Yeah. Have a good day. David in D.C., good morning. Hello, David? David's missing. Oh, David, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, go right ahead.
As far as the Republicans talking about the Democrats supported these initiatives, there was one congresswoman who wanted answers to 9/11 before this commission. They persecuted this woman in public.
I'm not a Republican, just so all the callers know. As a libertarian, I think the Democrats and the Republicans are just getting together to rip up the Constitution and get us into lots of trouble around the world. So,
well, to be honest with you, I think this is also Bush on his State of the Union address. He called out three nations. Now he's done little to do anything about what North Korea is doing in the way of nuclear arms, and that's because he's hand tight. He's tied us up. There's nothing we can do. The serious threats that are out there, he's done nothing about, and now we can't do anything about them because he got this mess in Iraq.
David, hold your line. Alvin in D.C. Let's get two from D.C. at it. Good morning, Alvin.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen and ladies. You know, one of the things that I wanted to point out is that, you know, they're prosecuting Mr. Clark, and when the planes actually were coming, Mr. Clark was the guy who was in the Situation Room, you know, making a lot of the decisions about what should be done. And now this guy's not fit enough, you know, to come up to Congress to testify about our counterterrorism plan. You know, that's what I find to be the most outrageous, is how they kind of turn on the people who are actually at the helm at the time of a national crisis, and they turn on them like a pack of wolves. I just wanted, you know, a response to that.
Okay, David, thank you very much. Al and David in D.C. Jim Pomeli.
What I find outrageous is that the Bush administration let Richard Clark be in charge, and now Richard Clark is attacking the people who were in charge, which in fact was Richard Clark. It's bipolar.
Adrian and Fort Washington. Write that down quickly, bipolar.
Hey, how you doing?
Good morning, Adrian.
Actually, the point I wanted to make was, first of all, when we first got attacked, we were attacked by Bin Laden and supposed to be Al-Qaeda. But then we ended up going into Iraq to go find Hussein, which completely had me mind-boggled. Because at first I'm thinking they're the same people. Then I'm like, well, wait a minute. Why are we going to Hussein if Bin Laden is the one that attacked us, right? And it all came to me. It was basically a personal vendetta that he had with Hussein from when he tried to assassinate his father in the past. And another thing, like, this is how I have it all breaking down. After he got elected, 8 months after he got elected, he had the war. So everybody forgot about the scandal, how he got in office in the first place. So everybody stopped thinking about that. So everybody had to support Bush because we were at war. Either you were with the U.S. or you weren't with the U.S. So you had to support Bush. And now when he's about to come up for re-election again, now everything's starting to stir up again. And then he's going to break down and try to put a peace treaty between what is it, Pakistan and India? He's going to have a peace treaty with them, and that's going to be his big thing on him trying to get reelected. That's what he has planned for the future. So it's basically all this political stuff that Bush is doing to try to like put a sheet over everybody's eyes so they won't see what's really going on. And I think that's what he's doing. He like has these little plans and agendas so he can get reelected. And after he gets reelected, he tries to have something else. He forget about how he got reelected.
Okay. Adrian, appreciate your input. Thank you very, very much. He brings up some very interesting points, how even in the media, things have danced around. We're talking about gay marriages, and we're very concerned about indecency, but little do we hear about Iraq anymore, Jim Pomeli. Why?
Well, ask
thank
the,
you very much. Ask Kevin in Manassas.
Ask the liberal media.
Yeah.
George Bush.
Come on.
Hey, the reason we're talking about indecency is because George Bush isn't the one that went topless at the Super Bowl.
I'm not liberal. I'm American. Go ahead, Kevin. Good morning.
Yes, sir. This is my earlier comment about them attacking us.
Uh-huh.
Well, it started way back before with Clinton. Something a lot of Americans don't know, and a lot of the Muslim people tried to hide up. They would love to make this country a Muslim country.
They would?
All the fanatics. They do not like anything that is not Islamic. And it is in the Quran. And this jihad war is just an excuse for them to start it. So if we do not do anything against it, we will lose our freedom.
Have you read the Quran?
No, but I've got friends.
Okay. Thank you very much, sir.
Have you read it?
No, I haven't. I haven't made a statement on it because I don't know.
Well, actually, I have read.
Let's read it together. 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon Wireless System. Thank you very much, Kevin. I appreciate your input. Let's turn to another issue before our time runs out, and some local things. One, fencing in the Capitol. There's a lot of debate, a lot of discussion on Capitol Hill about security. And security, I drove past the White House last night up 15th Street, and I can't believe that's Washington, D.C. I couldn't even see the White House for this big wall between the Treasury Department and the Bank of America there. I can't even look down the avenue anymore. But now they're talking about fencing in the Capitol. What about that, Nicholas?
If I had the policy of governing this country in such a ham-handed way that was so disrespectful of the Constitution and the rights of my constituents, I'd fence myself in, too.
301-230-0980, pound 980 on the Verizon Wireless System. We have lines open where you can express yourself and make a comment on the things you believe and feel. And, you know, we all do this in Washington, D.C. It's a city of politics. Emily?
Well, you know, I'm curious if what specific types of attacks they're trying to prevent with the fencing. They were saying in the Post, suicide bombers or commando forces storming the building. Apparently, these are the people that are trying to convert us. And it's interesting because if there are specific knowledge of these types of attacks, then, you know, maybe that would be one thing. But I can't help but think that this is just part of a greater policy of just of perpetuating this climate of fear in our country. I mean, talking about how these radicals are going to come and put headscarves on all the women, like they're just going to storm the country one day and throw Korans at us and suicide bomb. Well, I mean, not saying that that can't happen, but, you know, and suddenly all the women will have to quit their jobs and stay at home inside these fences. I mean, let's not forget that, A, this happened with box cutters. So, you know, ballistic missile defense is ridiculous. And, B, this whole thing with, as Nick's saying, I mean, we're supposed to be trying to preserve our sense of freedom and celebrate our democracy and the communion of people and government. And, you know, this to me says, hey, we're letting them win. We're letting them make us afraid.
But where is the invasion here? I mean, you know, we are taking the...
They killed themselves when they came here. Well, they didn't stick around to convert us.
Jerry, I mean, Clinton shut down Pennsylvania Avenue, and there wasn't any terrorism threat.
Secret Service recommendations.
Right, and this is the same thing here. So I don't think you can blame Clinton or blame Bush for putting more security around the White House.
I blame Clinton, too.
You can blame both.
I think that it is despicable, and it is an insult to American democracy. I mean, we really have to ask ourselves, what sort of decisions are we making as a country? What decisions are our representatives making for us that put us in a situation where we have to fence ourselves in and we have to put up walls? Why are we in a state of perpetual war? And is this okay with you? I mean, for the people who are listening at home, is it okay to be in a state of perpetual war where you're afraid to walk down the street?
Oh, come on. 301-230-0980, pound 980 on Verizon Wireless System. A big scare came out this past week along with unemployment rates. But anyway, a big scare came out this past weekend that trains in America could be attacked, subways and things like that. What about that, Patrice?
Well, I'll tell you, Jerry, I have to tell you, the fencing, the fear that we have about our trains, it's all, as far as I'm concerned, a symbol of our blatant failure in our foreign policy and in protecting our country. The one thing that we cannot protect ourselves against is anger, okay? The biggest weapon that's going to be used against us is anger. If somebody's angry and they want to get back at us, they can do it regardless of the walls that we have, regardless of the precautions we take on the trains. What we need to do is to be working on our foreign policy so that we can defuse the anger in the Middle East.
Okay, let's talk to Eric in Fort Washington. Good morning, Eric.
Good morning. How is everybody today?
Fine. Go right ahead.
One comment basically regarding to blame and our actions in Iraq. I served in the Marine Corps in the Mediterranean when the Beirut bombing occurred in the Marine Corps barracks there. And I think what people don't understand in America is how unstable the Middle East is and has been for quite some time. And intelligence serves a critical role over there. And most Americans don't know the intelligence, whether it's accurate or inaccurate. But let's face it, Hussein was a bad guy. He controlled the oil in his region. And he had done some things in the past 10, 15 years that, you know, were basically taken as a threat against, you know, the world in general, not just America. And something had to have been done about it. And, you know, maybe intelligence could have done better in serving a more critical role in that. But most Americans don't know what the intelligence is. And unless you've been over there and spent time in that region, yet people don't understand just how unstable that region really is.
Okay, very good. Thank you very much, Eric. Let's talk to Steve in College Park. Good morning, Steve.
Good morning.
Go right ahead, please.
Yes. I'd like to commend the gentleman that just spoke. He is pretty much on the money.
Mm-hmm.
We work in intelligence services ourselves. We're supposed to be a democracy. No one man actually makes these decisions. The Democrats and Republicans, they need to get along. Let's take it back if you really want to put blame. Jimmy Carter was the president that actually started to dismantle our intelligence services. Our intelligence services have tried to do the best they can with the resources at hand, and there's a lot of information that has to be gleaned through to actually come up with the responses that we have to deem necessary to, in fact, deter these individuals, such as Hussein. He's not the only one in the world that is a threat. Mm-hmm. Grant that. Korea, we have to deal with. China may be in the future. Right now, China's our ally. But he also said, the man before me, the Middle East is unstable. It has been for years. This has been thousands of years, not just recently. And, you know, if we don't give our intelligence services the resources that they need, you cannot go into these places, you or I. You have to recruit people from within. That means you have to support them. You have to support them for the rest of their life, protect them if necessary, to get the information that we need. Now, granted, box cutters were used, you know, like the lady said, ballistic missiles weren't a threat. But in order to stop these individuals, we need the intelligence. We need the resources to fund these people.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know,
Steve, I think that's well put. I think that's well put, and a lot of people want to have that kind of understanding. Thank you very much for your call. Frank in Bowie, Maryland. Good morning to you, Frank.
Good morning. I just wanted to bring the attention to everybody that Clinton may have put the fences up there on Pennsylvania Avenue, but it was the Republicans that were fighting it then. Now the Republicans are running there, and they want more fences up. I'm a Republican, voted for Bush, but you can bet I'll never vote for him again.
Thank you very much, Frank. Let's talk to Mike in D.C. Good morning, Mike.
How you doing? Like, I'm calling because a lot of people have their intelligence messed up and everything. A lot of the fences that people are talking about that are now on Pennsylvania Avenue aren't for protection purposes at all. They're mainly this area beautification project that's going on, and there are people that are trying to keep people out of a construction site. People act like they don't see the big cranes and things that are in the middle of the street when they start screaming all this, oh, you know, they're protecting us from care. Like, that's the people come up and they don't have the right intelligence and they're too afraid to ask, you know, the right questions or too mm-hmm. afraid, so they make dumb assumptions. And, like, you know, we wouldn't have those types of fences. Why would you have those fences on one side of Pennsylvania Avenue and not have them on the other side of Pennsylvania Avenue when they live and all these things are wide open? People not making any real, you know, general assumptions. They just assume what they want to believe, you
okay.
know,
man,
because they want to be, you know, some people want to be scared. They want mm-hmm. to live in fear. And a lot of this stuff we do to ourselves, like the guy said earlier, that we allow ourselves to get divided when people throw these false topics at us and stuff, you know, like about, like, gay marriages and everything. Like my man said, like, they overshadow you with things so that they split and divide you as a nation. That's why you have two partisans in our democratic society right now, that they can't get along. You know, they throw these little things up,
okay.
and everybody wants to make themselves seem more moral than the other.
Thank you, Mike. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's talk to Anthony in D.C. Good morning, Anthony.
Hey, how are you?
Fine.
All right. Let's just be realistic about the gates. I'm all for it. I mean, we have people in this country. I mean, our borders are open. Guys are coming across left and right with intentions to kill. So if I was a farm owner and coyotes kept eating my chickens, I'm going to throw a fence around my chickens. I want to keep those coyotes out. So to me, that's nothing but common sense.
What about the Oklahoma bombing? What about those within the country that have caused terror, too?
That's true. But remember the Murrah building. I mean, that guy rode right up. There was no buffer in between the street. That to me, that's an isolated case.
Mm-hmm. Isolated? I mean,
for the state of the world right now, our biggest problem is fundamentalist Muslims. Will we do what it takes to win? I don't think that we will, because it's too much bickering going on between. I really wish people would just go back to 9/11 and look at those tapes and feel that same anger when those people were jumping out of those buildings because they didn't want to burn. I still cry for those people. That's the worst thing. I'm only 27. You know, I've seen some bad things in my life, but to me, that's the man. I don't know.
Okay,
it's just a different world.
Thank you very much.
Right.
Let's talk to Keith on his cell phone in Maryland. Where are you calling from, Keith?
I am in Atlanta, Maryland.
All right. Go right ahead.
What I've been hearing, a lot of people have been speaking about intelligence and things of that nature. I think we had the proper intelligence. People were telling the administration who did this, what we need to do to handle the people who did this. But the Bush administration didn't want to do that. They already had an agenda before they actually got the information. You know, intelligence, they say, you know, that it doesn't work. Well, it did work. We told the administration who did this, what do we need to do to apprehend or destroy the people who did this. But the administration had an agenda. They wanted, for whatever reason, to deal with Hussein, and that's what they did. And I don't think that there was a breakdown in the intelligence. I just think that the administration had an agenda regardless of what happened.
Okay.
I mean, I don't think that they, you know, didn't care about, you know, the people in the World Trade Center. It's
okay.
Just they got an agenda, and that's what they did.
Okay, thank you, Keith. Let's turn to Mike in Arlington. Mike, very quickly, you got about 30 seconds.
Yeah, one of your guests mumbled something. I'm a liberal. I'm not an American. I just want to mention how un-American that statement is.
I don't think you heard the statement right, sir.
Yeah, I did.
I made the statement. I said, I'm not a liberal. I'm an American.
I heard that right, and that's not American.
Well, why not?
That doesn't represent American thought, because America is based on pluralism. Read the Tocqueville. Read the Federalist.
Yeah, I still say I'm not a liberal. But, I mean, that's a play of words.
You're intolerant.
I'm intolerant. I'm not American. I hate America.
Not
thank
American.
You. Thank you very
thank
much,
you.
Mike.
Stop.
Thank you. You know, that's ridiculous. Now, I'm going to take a stand. Normally, I don't take a stand. But that is totally ridiculous. Totally ridiculous. Anyway, now back to the panel. Nicholas.
I just want to remind all the callers of a little known fact that you are actually more likely by far to be hit by lightning than to be a victim of terrorism. And we might want to take a look in this country at what our priorities are and why it is that we support an administration that keeps making it more likely to be hit by terrorism, that keeps antagonizing people around the world.
Okay, that's enough. I've heard enough from members of this panel saying that somehow we deserve terrorism. That somehow,
deserve?
You said by our actions, both of you guys said by our actions, more people hate us and want to bomb us.
I said
we
antagonize
actions,
people.
Republican actions.
Hold it, and let me point this
Democratic
out.
Democratic actions.
People who commit terrorism against us, they don't need a reason to come get us. They hate America regardless of what we do. They hate us whether we have troops in Saudi Arabia or not. They hate us whether we're in Afghanistan or not. These are nut jobs who are out to get us, and it has nothing to do with American foreign policy.
If that can keep you from...
Excuse me, folks, we can all sing together?
Absolutely not, because Osama bin Laden has indicated that the reason for the attack and the reason he is after America is because of our policy in the Middle East. Until
so
we
you,
resolve
think
the
has a, you think he has a point?
Yeah. Until we resolve the Israeli-Palestinian issue, we will have to fear terrorism.
I have
Emily,
to absolutely agree. I mean... Whether or not Osama bin Laden is going to find any reason to hate us or to wield his power, he will not be able to recruit people as easily to his side if what he says is not backed up by fact, which is our Middle East policy, the state of the economy in the Middle East, and the Israel-Palestinian situation. And if I can say one final thought, to extend what Nick is saying to the previous caller who was talking about all these people who are coming into Bahamas and we have to put up fences, let's remember that we have actually suffered more domestic terrorism events as a result of citizens of the United States. There have been two that have happened on American grounds. The first and the second World Trade Center bombing, there was the Oklahoma City bombing, the Unabombers, the bombing of the Olympics in Atlanta. All these things have happened by U.S. citizens.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'm still not a liberal. I'm an American. Whether you like it or not, Mike, thank you very much, my panelists, such as Jim Homily, Republican, Nicholas Stalwart, Libertarian, Emily Leffler, Independent, and Patrice McKinney, Democrat, and Eric Mickelson, Green Party. Got to get out of here, folks. Thank you very much, all you good folks. I want to thank those who helped to put it together. Steve Solomon, our technical producer. Public Affairs Administrator Producer Carolina Restrepo. Shaheen Shaheen, Public Affairs Assistant. This is Public Affairs, a presentation from Big 100 and Sports Talk 980, Clear Channel Radio in Washington, D.C. Till next time, my friend, have a good day. Enjoy yourself. Much peace, much love.